Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thoughts, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Production for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number one to speak. You can also reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, alcohol and the family. Our guest, Dr. Derek Lee, a licensed psychologist, life coach, and author of the book, Do What You're Built For. There are millions of children of alcoholics in the United States. Alcohol is one of the most prevalent drugs used and abused in the United States. It is addictive and apparently as destructive as it is addictive. How does alcohol impact on the family system? Alcoholism is the continued excessive and use and usually uncontrollable use of alcoholic drinks. Alcohol has many devastating effects on today's society, and some of those effects include accidental injury or death resulting from drunk drivers, loss of employment, unstable dysfunctional families, and health problems. Not only does alcohol harm the alcoholic, but it also has a negative impact on the family, causing extreme emotional pain and suffering. With continuous therapy, the alcoholic and friends and family of the alcoholic can control the disease of alcoholism. Many people are social drinkers and only drink once in a while, such as parties and weddings. They are able to consume alcohol without experiencing any negative side effects. At this point, I'd like to bring in Dr. Lee. Hello, Dr. Lee.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So we have alcohol, and a lot of people, you know, deal with alcoholism and families and things like that. And some people say that, you know, you just need to fix that guy right there. He's drinking a lot, and, you know, that's all need to happen. Him, the guy that's throwing down the drink. So is that such the case, or is the problem bigger than that?
Well, I think when you think about alcoholism, you know, sometimes, and I need to talk about it from the perspective as a psychologist, like individually, as well as thinking about it from the perspective of thinking about it from systems. So if you're thinking about it as an individual, it's an addiction. And, you know, we need to treat it as such. Alcohol is a legal drug, and like you mentioned, and I think people tend to take that for granted. I think we also need to realize that some families and individuals use alcohol responsibly. I think the challenge that we're facing with, when we think about alcoholism, is that sometimes you can start looking at it from a family systems perspective, like what's going on in the individual's life, like whether it's individual stressors, collective stressors that may be impacting their choice to use alcohol, usually as a coping mechanism. And what I usually try to share with people is that when you drink to the point of excess and, you know, where you're not in control of your faculties, blacking out, where it's not even just being in life at a party where you're just, their behavior is so exaggerated, you know, that's a problem. And usually alcohol, people forget, it's really one of those drugs, you know, that are about sedating you, but it's also about, you know, opening up your inhibitions. It's like, so you sort of use it as a way to sort of forget all of the stress and the pain, the hurt, the frustration, you know, that, you know, that you're going through. But at the end of the day, if you got to bounce back to reality. So the only way you can cope is by staying in that state of sort of perpetual intoxication. And that's a problem.
Doc, we got a caller already. I'm going to take this caller on 8466.
Sure.
Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Good evening.
Hello? Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was listening to the facts that you provided and that Dr. Lee provided, and my daughter was, I let her listen as well because, unfortunately, at times her father drinks. He doesn't drink a lot, but when I say a lot, I'm not going to say every day. Maybe on the weekends, one of those casual
mm-hmm.
drinkers. And mm-hmm. His behavior from when he drinks really it stresses us out. Even if it's for 48 hours, it's having
mm-hmm.
a profound effect on us. I know that it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my daughter said that she wanted to let you know how it makes her feel as well.
It makes my heart breaking, and it makes me sad.
Wow. And that's powerful. And I do think, you know, when we talk about, like, I know you mentioned the term casual, you know, when I was growing up, we used to call them, like, functional alcoholics. Like, they're productive throughout the week.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
work, they're good providers. It's not an issue, you know, in terms of just taking care of being responsible. But then when it's time to sort of wind down, then you see sort of like, okay, now this is what I'm getting into. I think what people have to understand is when you're drinking to the point of where it's behavior change, and that's what alcohol does. It does change the behavior no matter how casual you are. But you get to the point where it's changing behavior and it's impacting others, you really need to take the time to listen to that feedback. So it shouldn't be an experience where, like your daughter just describing, that the change in the behavior is stressing her out. Because that's a signal that something's not right, that it's too much,
right.
It's too intense. Because I think at some point your daughter has every right to be like, he's not the person I'm used to. This is not the dad that I'm used to engaging. And I think sometimes, you know, and I think it's a, you know, maybe it's not a conversation your daughter has with him, but it's also really trying to help him to understand what is he getting out of that? Because apparently he wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't feeding some need. And that's what he would have to address in order to start thinking about changing his behavior.
Right. And you know, the difference between us two, I didn't grow up in a household like that. My parents didn't
mm-hmm.
drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I know that his did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that weekend thing. And you're right,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, and I know there's a lot of pain inside, and he is self-medicating
mm-hmm.
with that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it doesn't hurt
mm-hmm.
when he drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But it hurts us
and
when
he
does.
And I think daughter would have to be conscious of is not to internalize his pain, because your daughter is expressing what, and, you know, I don't know your husband, so I'm not trying to diagnose or do anything like that, but I believe, like,
mm-hmm.
your daughter is expressing what you're noting, like there's something going on, and y'all feel it. So it's like his behavior sort of with the alcohol is his way of expressing the pain, but you and your daughter are containing it. So you want to really be at the place where y'all don't contain it, because it, as you contain it, it's sort of like your daughter saying, you know, she's feeling sad, but she really doesn't have a reason to feel sad. Based on his pain, she can have some empathy, you know, in
mm-hmm.
terms of
mm-hmm.
she doesn't want her dad to hurt, but she can't own it, because then after a while, then that's where depression and everything kicks in. because then she's starting to own some emotions that don't belong to her. And then you got to be conscious of that, too, that you don't own emotions that don't belong to you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee.
No problem.
So for an individual to become emotionally connected in the way that you said they shouldn't be connected, that's codependency?
Yes, that's a good term, and you want to be conscious of that, because what ends up happening, you try to do more to help the person and take care of the person instead of the person taking responsibility for the behavior. So individuals who fall in that codependent pattern tend to rationalize the other person's, particularly alcoholics, behavior, their responses to alcohol. They tend to minimize it. They try to explain it away. And then it's also this whole notion of internalizing it. Like we talked a little bit about with the last caller, that you have to be conscious that you don't own the issues that are connected to the person who's having a drinking problem.
Right. Because it's not your fault, right?
No. And I would say it's not an issue of fault. It really goes back to, I would frame it differently because that gets into blame, but I would say it's not your need. So whatever that person's need is, it's their responsibility to get it filled in a healthy way. But what they found out is alcohol is the way to help get that be filled. And you really want to challenge them to say, there's other ways. You can go to therapy. You talk to your pastor. You can do a lot of things to get support. You know, for those who are dealing with alcoholics, everybody knows Al-Anon. You know, so and I'm hoping before we leave at least at the end with resources that people can either call or find out, because there is help out there. And then people have to understand that, you know, sobriety takes a lot of different paths. And, you know, I remember when I used to go drug and alcohol training years ago, one of the trainers told me that sometimes in the end, sobriety is death. You know, some people don't stop what they're doing until they die. And I think you have to understand it's everything in between in terms of recovery. But at the end of the day, people have to take responsibility and they can't own someone else's.
Wow. Okay. So I think we have different types of drinkers. And from the information that I've been researching, I have another group of alcoholics, which these guys we're kind of alluding to, is the group of alcoholics can be classified as problem drinkers. They experience negative side effects as resulting from their drinking and face problems in relationships, jobs, or create accidents as a result of their drinking. That's that guy that's weaving down the street, right? They have some as ignoring or not able to attend to his family matters, including his wife, personal matters, and the financial matters in the household, right?
Like that.
That's that guy. And we got a third group of drinkers classified as. You say?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Alcoholics, the need alcohol because he or she is dependent on it. That's the people that develop the physical addiction to alcohol, which is that comes close to that state where you say, if you don't stop, you die. Once you get that far, your body's physically addicted to alcohol. That's a deeper hole.
And then it's another one that I would add, and, you know, we sort of talk about, it's the notion of explosive drinkers. It's some people who binge, you know, and it could be whether they binge when they go out, you know, and occasionally and you'll see that more with sort of the younger population, you know, particularly when they're having those parties. And when you think about all of those situations where all those sexual assaults sort of happen on college campuses and other situations, it's usually involved with some sort of drug activity and alcohol sometimes. And where they're drinking to the point of not just intoxication, but also of unconsciousness. And, you know, and that's another sort of behavior. And then we also, when they talk about the problem drinker, you know, I want to go back to sort of what the caller was talking about. It's that functional alcoholic. You know, like I said, some people can create some structure to limit it, but when they start drinking, it gets to the level of it's a problem. And, you know, but for them, because it's contained, you know, they don't have DUIs, you know, they're not walking down the street, you know, it's like, you know, it might just be in their house or, you know, with some a safe group of people, or it's at a local bar, but they can get home, or people make sure they're okay. But that's a problem, you know, and I think we have to understand just because it doesn't it lead to conduct problems, that it isn't necessarily, you know, that doesn't mean that you're not a problem drinker.
Right. Okay. So it says 1 in 10 drinkers in the United States are an alcoholic. Is that, that your understanding of that?
Well, that might be right. I don't know statistics off the top of my head, but I would agree, you know, that it's a lot. If you add in that younger population, you think about college campuses, that's probably about right.
Man, that's scary. There are more than 10 million alcoholics in the United States. Majority of alcoholics are married with jobs and have families. So these, we ain't talking about guy on the corner, just the guy sitting on the corner with a bottle of wine that drinks every day.
Exactly. But see,
talking
again,
about professionals.
We stereotype. Exactly, because
right.
We stereotype. We got to think, people, it's a lot of people. I mean, state stores, you know, are around for a reason. And a lot of people go and they take that stuff home. So, you know, it's not like they're out and about, you know, people. And I think alcohol is that sort of silent addiction at times. And because it's legal, you know, nobody talks about, you know, alcohol being in somebody's house. It's okay.
Right.
It's functional.
Right.
It's like, and I think like the caller said, her husband grew up like that. She didn't. But there's a lot of people who drink responsibly. So they'll keep alcohol around. And,
right.
You know, and nobody thinks twice about it.
Right. That's interesting because for those 1 in 10 drinkers, they say alcohol is one of the largest health problems in America, alcoholism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, because physically, you think
one
about
in 10.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I'm thinking about my family history, you know, I had an aunt who died from alcoholism. She literally drank herself to death. I mean, so, and, you know, and she just could not stop doing it.
That's interesting. So alcohol being so toxic, like, you know, cigarettes, they have a warning on the package. You understand what I'm saying? How come alcohol
mm-hmm.
doesn't have anything like that on it?
I think they have some, but it's usually about the, because we talk more about the impact on infants, like fetal alcohol syndrome, you know,
uh-huh.
people who drink during their pregnancy, and it actually leads to some cognitive and physical deformities in children. And,
right.
you know, and that's a disorder. I ain't going to say you hear about it a lot, but when it happens, it's usually because, you know, that parent just didn't, you know, drink heavy during, you know,
right.
that gestation period. So, you know, but again, when things are legal, we tend to minimize side effects. So as much as people
right.
say, you know, smoking is bad, guess what? People
right.
still smoke.
Right. So is there something on alcoholic beverages that says don't drink when you're pregnant or something like that, or this could be harmful
yeah,
to your health?
I think that I've seen that. I've seen it about pregnancy. I'm not sure about other health factors, but I've seen the issue around pregnancy, like where it says, you know, ingesting alcohol can lead to sort of like problem experience, you know, just like problems with your children. So I've seen that,
right.
but other than that,
okay.
I can't really say I've seen anything. And it might have some other side effects, but I can't say off the top of my head. I don't tend to drink that way where I have bottles to look at, so. And I think they talk about,
yeah,
you
I
know,
know,
this sort of intoxication.
Myself, that's
yeah, so that's
yeah.
what I said. But I've seen stuff about, you know, intoxication. I see a lot more advertisement around drink responsibly. I see a lot of that now.
Right. Yeah. I think maybe they should market responsibly, market alcohol more responsibly and, you know, include that into the advertisement.
Well, I think, but I see that with the drink responsibly piece. Like, I think when people talk about alcohol, like on or you know whatever they do in the commercials, I see a lot
right.
of you know they always add drink responsibly. But I've also seen how they've added that category of buzz drinking as an issue. where people who, you know, they say have that as a crime. They're treating buzz drinking like driving under the influence.
Buzz drinking, which means you're not too high, you just got a buzz?
Well, but you're above, and I guess, and based on what I've seen, it seems like you're either at or just slightly above the alcohol limit, you know, in terms of a DUI, but, you
right.
know, you're just buzzed. You know, where you're sort of light and easy, feeling good, but, you know, again, you're not completely in control of your faculties.
Right. Okay. But legally, you're above the legal limit, so it's not much you can do about it.
I think you're slightly, but I think it's like, yeah, because we all forget we can only drink so much in terms of our, you know, the index, you know, in terms
right.
of what, you know, our bodies can tolerate. And, you know, but it seemed like the threshold for what people are measuring, at least the law enforcement is measuring, is lower. So it isn't just about, you know, doing, you know, things with, you know, where you're completely intoxicated. It's more around doing things where you're just impaired. And I think people have to understand that the notion of impairment is what people are looking for now.
Right.
Like, how are we impaired when we drink? And that's a different conversation, and I think it's one that people, you know, considering as much, and we need to start considering more.
Right. Okay, so I'll just say that we mentioned self-medicating. So a person that drinks alcohol may feel, how do you feel at first, stimulated at first? And is he stimulated by alcohol?
Because remember, with alcohol, it does a few things. So it you have stimulation, but I think what people tend to forget is it's a sedative. Well,
right.
It's going to have a sedating effect. And what it does is sort of sets up this notion of liberating you from, you know, whatever thoughts, like the inhibition. You sort
right.
of go through the process of eliminating some inhibitions, but then it's almost like it's a disguised elation. It's all temporary, you know, so you feel
right.
good for a minute, then you kind of come down. So that's why you see people like in a stupor. So
right.
where they're just sort of more sluggish, slower, it's like your body, you know, slows down. And,
right.
you know, and I think that's the part where, you know, you have some people get really excited and everything, but that what you're seeing is the lack of inhibitions. You know, the things, your frontal lobe isn't functioning correctly to sort of stop you from
right.
doing those things, those risky behaviors. So they look like,
right.
wow, you know, they're the life of the party, but what really is going on is, you know, they're sort of, you know, yellow flashers are off. And they're going to be off for a while because the brain is sort of saturated.
Right. Okay. All right, listeners. Hope you guys are listening to Dr. Lee. Children learn to drink, to use, how to use alcohol from their parents. Assuming the parent is coming into the house or lives in the house. So if a child that's raised around an alcoholic, what type of situation is that for a kid?
Well, and I think it's no one size fit all. I think when I think about it, that's why I said I would probably look at it from the perspective of, like, social modeling, is that as a parent who's an alcoholic or, you know, an individual who's an alcoholic, you're modeling certain behaviors, particularly what you're modeling is how to cope with life. How do you cope with stress?
Right.
How do you cope with problems?
Right.
And
right.
what you're demonstrating is that you need sort of a assistance, and it's an assistance in a sense that it's a crutch, you know, and what we are going back again, that alcohol is keeping you detached from the world. You're not fully present. You're not fully engaged. So what you're showing
right.
your children is, guess what? I'm not really connected. And then it's, you know, going back to the first caller, it creates some mixed feelings with children because then they think, is it something going on with me? Is it my fault? I think you mentioned that earlier.
Right.
And that's why I was really challenging folks to say you can't own other people's needs because it isn't an issue of, you know, blame. We want to get into that. But we want to get into the notion of there's a need that isn't being met. And then what also gets communicated is that what my need is greater than my love for you. And then that creates some other mixed feelings because then it goes back to, you know, if I'm a child or a spouse, it's like this notion of inadequacy. I'm not good enough.
Right.
I'm not going to help fulfill you. I can't sort of replace or address that need. You need that alcohol or the substance to do that. And in the end, an individual has to take care of him or herself. So it's not about the alcohol. It's about they have to address that need and make sure that they, you know, take responsibility for how to fix themselves.
Okay. Well, through my research, they said there are about 28 million children with alcoholics. In the United States alone, of the 28 million children, there are 7 million children who are under the age of 18. As a result, children have to grow up and mature under the scrutiny of their alcoholic parents. 40 to 50% of children of alcoholics become alcoholics themselves when they are older. Those children who do not become alcoholics often become workaholics or develop eating disorders. That's from Facts for Families. They say children of alcoholics have a variety of emotional problems that stem from their alcoholic parents. As you said, it's no one thing. They may feel guilty. You mentioned that. They may blame themselves for their parents drinking. Another emotion that children feel is anxiety. They may feel anxious because they're worried about their home life and their own safety. In addition to guilt and anxiety, the child may feel embarrassment. The children may be afraid to invite friends over to the house. What else? The children are embarrassed to introduce their friends to their home life, which you can kind of understand if you got a real bad, you know, sloppy drunk in the house. It's next to your mom or your dad. You don't want your friends to see them like that. You know how kids can be cool with that type of thing also.
And I think what I would do, and just maybe to sort of broaden the conversation for a second, is it ties into sort of the book that we wrote, Do What You're Built For. And one of the things I sort of, highlighted in the book is how disappointment is a underestimated emotion. And I think what we mean by that is that disappointment, you know, it's this whole notion of having some regret that is out of your control. And what ends up happening, people don't process the regret that's out of their controls. They try to hide from it, deny it, and they create sort of experiences where there's a distortion. And then they withhold the truth for themselves. And because you're withholding the truth from yourself, you have to find a way to deal with the pain. And if we insert alcohol as a way to deal with the pain, but you can never escape it. So what we talk about in terms of do what you're built for is strategies that you need in order to move forward in life. And some of that is you do have to take your time to do like a self-evaluation. And some of that self-evaluation may be coming from, you know, we talked about people who sort of like are pitchers or dear friends, people who pour into you, people who you can trust and have a really good relationship with, who can give you feedback about what you're doing. But you have to listen to that truth. And sometimes you have to take the time to look yourself in the mirror to own what is deep down inside of you. Because alcoholism is really a reaction to something. You know, nobody grows up to say, I'm going to be an alcoholic. You're usually reacting to something. Even though there's family history, you don't have to do it. And even what you talked about, what ends up happening is this notion of there's this addictive behavior. There's an addictive quality. And they're talking about a lot of that with genetics and things like that now. But, you know, but the key is even despite all of that, you don't have to exercise or sort of kind of open up that gene. You can
right.
make some decisions to say, because we have free will. We're conscious human beings. So we can make different choices.
Right.
But some of it is you have to understand that, hey, you know, and I have to say, even, you know, just to share a little bit, you know, in terms of personal disclosure, on my mother and father's side, there were a lot of problem drinkers. So I had to make decisions about what alcohol was going to be in my life. Doesn't mean I was going to be a problem drinker, but I had to say, hey, I see how it can be destructive. Like I said, I have an aunt who died. I had an uncle who, you know, pretty much drank himself really almost to the end of his life. I've seen people who were functional alcoholics work. I have one uncle, I remember one of my uncles told me a story how he used to drop his older brother off to work every morning. And he said he never saw a group of men before they started work. He said they would drink each of them a fifth of alcohol before they started work. He told me, I've never seen this. But this it becomes like a lifestyle, a culture. So, like he said, you know, it was all of these things. And then what happened to me was the alcohol had a message. And I had to say, is that the message that I want? Do I want to live like that in terms of my family? Do I want to be, you know, do I want to make sure I can be responsible? Or what does it mean? And I think we have to ask those honest questions, because if you don't take it seriously, then you only do what you know. Versus responding to how life is.
All right, Doc, we got another caller. 8466. Welcome to the Vodka Talk.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Lee, can you tell me why it seems like society is more accepting of alcoholism? I can remember having a teacher in high school who was an alcoholic, and we all knew.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to work every day, drunk, and
it
was like, okay. I think, you know, society sends a message of, you know, it's okay for you to drink. And when I've worked with women with DNA issues, I only had one client out of all the years I worked with who was put into treatment for alcoholism. It's accepted. And I remember taking a legal class and the lawyer stating that he believed that because a lot of like judges drink, you know, the laws are different for people who drink versus other addictions. It just amazes me. Like, it's okay to be a drunk.
I mean, and you're hitting it on the head, and I think a lot of it goes back to stigma. Number one, it's not an illegal substance. And so what it comes down to is almost like a moral or value decision. So as long as you're – and then I think people look at the consequence of alcohol from a conduct perspective. So as long as you're not problematic in terms of you're not doing something destructive – to other people or society, because like you said, when it's self-destructive, people are okay with it as long as it's not interfering to the point that it's just diminishing really your work performance. You know, in families, people who have to deal with it personally, but then that's something behind closed doors. So people only think about alcohol in terms of what is the consequence or the impact you have on people. So people get upset when you have a drunk driver kill somebody. So then it becomes a problem. You know, they get upset with DUIs. They get upset with, you know, any sort of destructive behavior. But it's not really the alcoholism. You know, they talk about the consequence of it more than they do what motivated that person to drive out drunk and curse somebody. So I agree with you.
That's probably why a lot of alcohol is minimized. You know,
right. It's a behavior.
It's a choice.
And we talk about the consequences more than we do the person who, like it's funny how you said you had a teacher. I had one in elementary school that we thought was an alcoholic. We used to see her behavior change after lunch. So even as an eighth grader, we knew something ain't right. And then it was to the point as kids, we wanted to smell her coffee cup.
to say what, like, right, what's in your cup that you, like, right, something ain't right.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Because you saw something, she just, her behavior changed, it just wasn't right. And I think, so when, it's like, but again, because she was showing up, you know, she wasn't, you know, doing anything horrendous to anybody. But again, it's about, if it's not to the point where it's destructive in terms of, and having a horrific impact on society, we're not talking about it.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that insight. Wow.
No problem.
That's very interesting right there. You make that comparison between heroin and alcohol, the different ways that people perceive both of those drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when somebody said, you know, I did a quarter bag of heroin over the weekend, all eyebrows go up. But somebody drank,
exactly.
somebody had a, like you said, guy, when you guys drink a fifth in the morning, no problem.
Or we describe it as, oh, I turned it up. You know, I was out partying. You know, I had a good time. That's how we describe it. But if we said it to the point, you know, I almost blacked out this weekend. You know, I drank to the point where I passed out. I threw up a couple of times because I had too much. Oh, I woke up sick. We don't describe it in the ways that it really is. We describe it in a way where we promote it, where it seems good, it's sensationalized. So it's not even, it's all of us, you know, and that's the language. But we know what that person means when they say, I turned it up. We know that they got tore up from the floor up. But we just sort of, oh, okay, that's what you did. But it's just as bad as, like you say, I did a quarter bag of heroin.
And just to the point, addiction, alcohol, physical withdrawal from alcohol can kill you. But not from heroin. Heroin withdrawal doesn't kill anybody physically.
Wow.
You feel like you want to die, but it don't kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But alcohol withdrawal can kill you physically.
Mm.
But like you said, that's a legal drug, so that minimizes a lot of the effects of alcohol and alcoholism. So it's been minimized, marginalized culturally and politically.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, it's a billion-dollar industry, so we're not going to get into all the money that's made from that. It's not going away. So like you said, you have to learn to deal with you and your problems in a way that doesn't harm you or your family or your community.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I know the topic is alcohol, but even getting to broaden the conversation a little bit more, I guess that's sort of I have the same concern when it comes to legalizing marijuana. It's like, what is going to be the impact on people? You know, when it becomes that you can smoke this anytime and anywhere, and, you know, what's going to be the impact on families? And, you know, and then I also say, we don't even understand sort of the medical, like the long-term medical effects, you know, marijuana is going to have. But we're going to find out with this generation, you know, where they're going to start doing studies. And then, you know, and I'm thinking about, like, what's the impact, you know, it's going to have on child, you know, fetal development, pregnancy, birth rates. It's like all of these things, you know, learning disabilities, cognitive problems. And it's like, because sooner or later, as this movement of legalization grows and it happens, then, you know, we're going to have some similar effects as alcohol. We're going to talk about marijuana addiction soon. You know, and in terms of what does this mean? Because, again, people want to say, well, it's not that bad. It calms me down. But, you know, someone told me that, you know, they're increasing the potency of the THC levels. They said, they have, you know, some conferences where all the producers, that's what they focus on. Who can get the highest marijuana, you know, so I guess weed or plant with the highest level of THC. And so what we say is, what is going to be the impact of that on our bodies? You know, and I think if, as we're thinking about that, it's like, you know, when things get legalized, we sort of reduce the level of scrutiny. You know, we think just because you ain't going to go to jail for it, it can't be that bad. But it still has an impact on it.
It's going to do what it do, right? As the man said, well, I forgot the movie, Ray Charles. Make it do what it do. So it's going to do it the same way it's legal or not.
Exactly. Exactly.
It doesn't change what you're doing. It just changes the legality of what you're doing, the consequences.
Exactly.
The legal
exactly.
consequences, the criminal consequences.
And you know, but and I think, and when things become legal, it just gets opened up to a broader population of people, and you know, where people are like, well, that's okay, you know, and you know, and I think, but the consequences, you know, whether intended or unintended, don't change.
Right. That's very interesting, because that's a because as with alcohol, I'm sure when marijuana becomes completely legal, is going to be lots of money made off of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trust me. Like you say, that's another billion-dollar industry. Another
right.
one that's like, trust me.
Right.
Colorado had a windfall when, you know, they legalized it over there.
Right. So alcohol is dangerous to the body. It's toxic to many parts of the body. It irritates tissue lining of the mouth, the throat, the stomach. Most people who drink for a long period of time are undernourished. Alcoholics have nutritional, no nutritional value other than calorie, alcohol, and alcoholic beverages. They consume alcoholic beverages instead of eating natural, nutritious foods, which is another subject. It's hard to find nutritious foods, but just for the sake of a conversation, you know, they rather drink than eat. Basically, that's kind of term of it. What an alcoholic does, you know. So, you know, we have all these diseases that are associated with alcoholism, cirrhosis of the liver, hepatitis, heart disease, high blood pressure, and it's linked to ulcers due to irritation of the stomach lining, low blood sugar, and cancer of the mouth, esophagus, and stomach. Excessive use of alcohol is related to sexual and reproductive problems, neurological disorders, and delirium tremors. That's when you physical addiction. So, that's a result of alcohol withdrawal. So, you know, just to go back to the you mentioned about the how alcohol affects the body. This thing, I was just looking at this thing called whiskey penis, where you people in relationships and marriages, and if you're drinking excessively, this thing called whiskey penis, contrary to popular belief. Alcohol is not an aphrodisiac and can actually inhibit your ability to attain an erection or orgasm, while it enables people to overcome their sexual inhibitions or anxiety. Excessive alcohol also has a negative psychosocial effect. No, physiological effect on the penis. It can have a psychosocial effect on the penis. Excessive drinking is a common cause of erectile dysfunction, according to the Mayo Clinic. Now, that's to all you guys out there going to the party with a bottle of bub, and that's your routine. They got this thing called whiskey penis. So be very sparing with how you drink and what you indulge into because your sexual inability. Inhibitions are removed because the alcohol helps you remove them. And it helps you be uninhibited. As you say, that part of the brain, right? Is it the frontal lobe or something like that? So
yeah,
that's what the alcohol is helping you do what you couldn't do when you were sober. That's what it's helping you do. Drinking alcohol to excess may make having good sex difficult, says Abigail Sand, clinical psychologist and alcohol expert. He said this because alcohol reduces both men and women's sexual sensitivity. Now, I'm not a marriage counselor or a sex counselor, but I'm thinking that may have an impact on at least some marriages and relationships.
Oh,
I don't
yes,
know.
It will. Yeah. Well, if you're not having sex regularly and you're in a relationship, I think that will have a problem. I can't see how it would.
Okay.
So like particularly if that's an expectation. So because you think sex means a lot of things. It's about intimacy, connection, and it's just about a physical release. It's a way to show you're connected. But again, when you think about alcohol becomes a substitute for all of those connections. So that's so you can see how you could it swaps, you know, a lot of healthy needs and responses with something that's unhealthy, and that's how powerful it is. That you know when you think about what you just described from a psychosexual perspective, it's huge, and how it just diminishes. And again, I want to keep using the word. It's like that person needs become so great that it causes them to detach from other people, not only from their needs, and that's the part that I really want people to understand, is that when you choose not to confront yourself and to deal with your needs and address those issues, when you make a decision to detach from yourself, you're detaching from everything else too. And then when you choose to use alcohol as a way to cope with that, that's the reason I could even understand just from a psychological perspective, that makes it easier to be disconnected from other people. And then when you're being disconnected from other people, that's why sex doesn't become important anymore. Because sex in and of itself is about a connection. So when you choose to be disconnected from yourself, and you're choosing to be disconnected from other people, and it means that you need less and less of connections with others. That's why sometimes you always see how people drink alone, or they are alone, or people leave them, and they're alone. And you know, because it just keeps you, it's not as social. Alcoholism isn't going to keep you as social. You know, I think about my aunt. She died alone. You know, so it was like my cousin's fault that she was alone.
So that's is that a form of dissociative behavior?
I hear where you're going with that, but dissociative behavior is more organic in nature. You know, you can have some, you know, like some alcohol-induced psychosis kind of moments, but. When we're talking about dissociative, that notion of, you know, and you know, just to be clear, with dissociation, that could mean anything from daydreaming to, you know, full on, I have, you know, sort of multiple personalities. So altered selves is the sort of the language that they're talking about. So I would sort of maybe say it may not be dissociative as much, but I would use maybe more like a disconnected, detached, you know, withdrawn, isolated.
Right.
Because you can be conscious of it, you know, that you're doing it, but it's just a habit at that point. It's more of a coping skill.
Right. Okay, so with that goes to communication is rare among members of the alcoholic family. The only attempts to communicate within the family involve trying to control the behavior and life of the alcoholic. So everybody in the family is trying to, he's drunk again. Hey, what are we going to do?
Exactly. And because guess what? When you have someone who's underfunctioned in a system, other people in the system have to overfunction in order to make it work. And I think that's what people tend to forget. Alcohol is causing you to lower your performance, which means somebody got to make up for that. That goes back to your point about codependency. It's when you continue to compensate for people who are lower functioning, that's the codependent behavior, because you're giving them the room to stay where they're at.
So since say both parents or one parent is alcoholic, the other parent is dealing with the other parent's alcoholism, and you have the oldest child, where he take on the role as the adult hero, and then feels responsible for the behavior of, you know, adults trying to make things better by doing outstanding work in school and extracurricular activities.
It could be, it's no one size fit all. That's one possibility. Or you could have that person being just as destructive. So it really depends on the experience and how people are internalizing. And in terms of family systems, it's sort of what is the function of the alcoholic? so from a family right. systems perspective, that alcohol has a purpose in that system. And people right. are getting something out of it. Some people might even enjoy having an alcoholic. You might not call it enjoyment, but it could be if you are a controlling person, that allows you to be in control. So right. it's like it could be a lot of things that lead to it. So they might complain, but at the same time, they may enjoy the power. And then that could yeah. even be like that with kids because, you know, you can have people grow up in it and say, I learned how to manipulate their parent. So they know, right. okay, they drunk now. Now let me ask them for the car or for $100 or sign this form right. and all these other things because right. they can get something out of it. So they learn, like, right. oh, okay, this is when I can get the most. And then at other times, it depending on if that alcoholic is aggressive or belligerent or abusive, right. then they also learn some things too.
Right. That makes a lot of sense because you're going to adapt to the situation or not.
Mm-hmm,
and like you
mm-hmm.
said, different people react to the same situation differently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's how it goes. And I know we said we want to talk about resources. And so I don't know if we're going to make sure before we close out to give people just some general resources where they can go, you know, for help or even refer people who they love or know for help.
Do you have any resources? I have a couple of resources.
I was just going to do like the general ones, like, you know, it's Alcoholic Anonymous and what people can realize that even if you're not an alcoholic and you're like dealing with someone, you can go to open groups. So where if you just want to get some support and sort of hear and maybe sort of get some resources for people who are in recovery. Then there's Al-Anon, and they even also have Al-Ateen, you know, for like children, adolescents, and adults, you know, for who have family members who are alcoholic. And then there's the ones who, you know, it's the 12-step model that, you know, AA and I think Al-Anon and them use, but some people aren't really feeling the sort of the spiritual aspect of it. But then there are some groups, you know, that are more secular in nature. So I would say find what makes sense to you, and then you can also look up on the city's website in terms of the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. They have, you know, an office of addiction, or I think it's substance abuse. I think it's addictions and substance. And then that's another resource. So the city will have, like, they have a helpline too, I think, if you just want to get general information and resources.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Doc. In closing, I want to say, given the severity, the danger, the destruction caused by alcohol, why does alcohol continue to be injected into mainstream, everyday, holiday, special day, individual, and family atmospheres? Given the gravity of alcohol's impact on the family system, it would behoove us to protect the ones we love by protecting and loving ourselves enough not to unleash this demon. As Doc said, we have Al-Anon Information Services of Delaware Valley at 4021 Walnut Street, second floor, Philadelphia, PA. 19104. You can also call 1-888-4-ALANON or 1-888-425-266 for meeting information. Alcoholics Anonymous, Philadelphia, PA, 215-923-7900. Alcoholics Anonymous, Pennsauken Township, New Jersey, 856-486-4444. Alcoholics Anonymous, Upper Darby, PA, 610-352-9897. And another Alcoholics Anonymous in Philadelphia, PA, 215-535-9609. So I hope you guys have listened to the show, and I hope we were able to reach someone and answered some questions that some people may have been thinking, maybe some things you've not been thinking about. You received some information. you know, to help you make meaningful, beneficial decisions in your life. Doc, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right. So, you know, one thing, as you were saying about alcohol, you know, is minimized or marginalized and things like that. So what about, why don't people see it for what it is regardless of the law? I mean, how are they allowing the law to interpret or marginalize something that they can see? I'm not quite getting that.
Well, I think, it goes back to your, and I'm going to keep speaking from a space of need. It's like if your need or your lack of connection to your need is greater, you know, than sort of your desire to change, then your need is going to dominate you. So it's like if we're not conscious of the things that bring us down, they bring us down.
Okay. And would it have anything to do with the billions of dollars being made by for the sale of alcohol?
Well, listen, America is all about marketing. So, you know, again, but it's, at the end of the day, just like every commercial, no commercial can make you do anything. It's a choice.
Right.
So at the end of the day, I tell people, never give up your free will. That's the power we all have. You got to
hear that?
A choice to engage something and a choice not to.
Listeners, y'all hear that? Never give up your free will. Never surrender. Never back down. Always maintain your ability to make a decision that is in your best interest.
Yes,
was that right,
amen,
Doc?
Amen to that. Amen to that, definitely.
Okay, so remember that alcoholism is looked at as a problem affecting the whole family, not just the individual alcoholic. It's not just this problem. It's the family problem. And I'm going to make that a little bigger and say that's the extended family's problem, and that's the community's problem also, because it takes a village to raise a child, and I think it takes a village to support a village, you know, to support a family and the individuals of the village. So we all need to give support to each other in terms of alcoholism. Reach out, give out information, support, and help people make decisions in their best interest and turn their lives around and to have a more healthier life situation or improve their quality of life and what have you. So I want to ask the village to reach out and support, you know, not just in alcoholism, but we're talking about alcoholism today, tonight. And reach out, everyone, reach out and help somebody that's having a problem. Reach out to somebody that's walking on that path that you see on the path of alcoholism. And just reach out and give them a help. Give them some help. Just reach out, sit down, talk with them, direct them to services if you can. Don't put yourself in danger or anything like that, because I know sometimes people don't want to hear what you have to say. And they become aggressive towards you. So be very, use your brain when you're talking to people. Think, is it somebody you can have that conversation with? Because not everybody want to hear what you have to say. In closing, I want to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host the show. I want to thank Dr. Derek Lee for coming on the show tonight. Remember, Dr. Lee has a book out called Do What You're Built For. You guys might want to check that out. Also, I want to thank our listening and calling in audience. I appreciate you guys calling in and listening, tuning into the show. I want everybody to tune in next week for the next show. Doc, thank you very much personally, and I hope you come back on the show again. Hope it's not your first and your last time on the show. Hope to hear from you again. Yeah. There are plenty of opportunities for a guy like you to present on the show. All right.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for coming. And I mean what I'm saying. You know, you're always welcome back on the show.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Ken Jones, I hope you're listening tonight. If not, thank you. everyone out there, for again, thank you for calling in the show. And next week, tune in. Also, you can listen to the show at We Talk Production on Blog Talk Radio. Go to We Talk Productions and type in the show, and you can listen to the previous shows. I want to thank you again. All right, Doc, thanks. That show's over. Thanks a lot. My next show. I had a guest, Ken Jones, here.